Wisconsin Eye is at Walnut Way Conservation Corp, 17th and North Avenue in Milwaukee, and here's why. A few weeks ago, there was some issues, protests, shooting, and unrest a few blocks west of here, in the Sherman Park neighborhood. So Wisconsin Eye asked, and I'm so grateful, six Milwaukee legislators who either represent Sherman Park or districts continuous to Sherman Park have agreed to talk about the issues raised by those incidents and where we go from here. So I want to thank you all. I want to thank Representative LaTanya Johnson, who was elected to the Assembly in 2012, just won a primary in State Senate District Number 6. LaTanya, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative David Bowen was elected in 2014. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Leon Young was elected to the Assembly in 1992. He will be the longest serving member of the Assembly. Representative Young, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Evan Goyke was elected to the Assembly in 2012. Evan, thank you. Jason Fields served three terms in the Assembly and just won a primary to return in District 11.
Four terms.
Four terms.
I apologize, Jason. I got the blue book wrong. And last but never least, State Senator Lena Taylor has served in the legislature since 2003. Senator, thank you very much. Let's open it this way. I do want to cast it forward, but it's important, maybe a one-minute summary of the incidents at Sherman Park, your view. How about we do one more thing, agree that this is a Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton-free zone for the next, 30 minutes or so, so there's not a lot of blame, because we do have issues that we need to discuss, and where do we go from here? So 1 minute on lessons learned and relearned from the incidents. LaTanya, please, do you want to go first?
The lesson that I learned from this incident is that as an elected, I believe that we could feel the community's tension. The one thing that I learned is that you never necessarily take that for granted. It's better to be proactive and, just get in there and try to get things done. Regardless of what that is, whether that's legislation or, door knocking, just trying to get some of the community advocates together to get the feel of what was in the community. But it's always better to be proactive. And I know as an elected, I think I failed to do that.
Thank you. Representative Bowen?
Well, I think it's clear that we've fallen short in making sure that, everyone in our community continues to believe that the system can continue to be changed to benefit them, to prioritize their lives. When I was out the night of the start of the unrest, I saw a lot of people that were the hopeless I've ever seen. And I think they truly felt like that social compact that they have, that they should have the access and the right to live a great and thriving life in this state, in this country. They felt that that would be no more and that we could never get there. And I think that hopelessness is something that we have to pay a lot of attention to, and especially listening to the voices of those that are neglected. I think it's clear that a lot of the support services and the things that we may have out is missing a very significant part of the population. And a lot of those individuals are young people and young adults that are black and live in a number of neighborhoods in the city.
Thank you. Representative Young?
And thank you for having this particular conversation. I think, first of all, the relationship between law enforcement and the African American community is not good, and we have to do a better job. And not just this last incident, and not just in Milwaukee, just throughout the United States. And we have to do a better job of repairing that relationship. Mm-hmm. And we keep on talking about we need to do this and we need to do that, but ultimately we fail in it. I'm looking at some legislation where we can, I think, help engage the community. And one example would be dealing with deadly force when officers use it, and maybe we need to redefine, reopen that that definition. So that's just throwing that out there. But ultimately, I think there's a certain segment of our society, African American young adults, young teenagers, that feel that they've been ignored. And ultimately, we have to show them some love. We need to find jobs, education, training, all these good things to make them part of the community. And if we do that, I think we won't have a repeat of this scenario.
An important PS on that is Representative Young is a former Milwaukee police officer.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Goyke.
Thank you, Steve. To build off of what Representative Young just said, let's be really honest and candid. The rules are different
movement for young African American men. The structures that we've built, whether that's the court system or our police, these young men are treated differently and worse, disparate, and it's not fair. And so lessons learned is less, it's not learned, we know that. You can see it. If we left right now and walked into a Milwaukee County Circuit Courtroom, folks sitting on one side of the courtroom would mostly be people of color, and the people in the front of the courtroom, the judge and the lawyers and the staff, would be white. So we know this. I'm hoping that it's a lesson heard and that we act to fix those structures that aren't fair.
Thank you. And four-term Assembly Member Mr. Fields.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here with everybody else. You know, I guess the lesson learned is that, you know, we are all in a community. It's, there has to be a value set on everybody here. You know, there cannot be two tales of Milwaukee or two different cities, because Milwaukee is one city. There cannot be Milwaukee and then the rest of the state of Wisconsin. And I think the message, I don't want to say it's a lesson learned, but I think the message that was sent was, we cannot continue to do things the same way we've been doing them. Whether that's in education, we need to get over these stupid arguments, voucher or public schools. They all have black kids in them, so let's just make sure there's quality education. Whether there be business or economic development, we need to make sure that people are getting a fighting chance to increase or achieve their dream. We can't continue to give money to the same old people. And so for me, I don't think it was a lesson learned. Rather, it was the dragon has finally woken up, and there's a case that needs to be made. We cannot continue down this pathway where we're not valuing everybody.
Mm-hmm. Senator?
I think everybody has said things that are right on the head that I want to build off of, lesson heard. Because I think the truth of the matter is, we've heard the statements. And I think it's ironic that we're at Walnut Way, because I believe that Representative Young said something that's very true, and it's an effort that I've talked about. I think all our people need is some love and faith, and I think the lesson is, we're not going to be able to continue as it was. There's a generation of individuals who have felt unheard, and they have nothing to lose. They feel hopeless, and they have basically said, we ain't doing it your way. And so it's nothing about Sherman Park, with all due respect. It's exactly what I heard around this table. It is about Milwaukee. It's about a lack that has existed. And what are we going to do to address that lack? And just like after the incident, love came into that community and support came into that community, and there was a different level of calm into that family that was affected and the people that are around them. But people need some faith that people hear them and that there's a pipeline to opportunity that's going to exist for them. And I say it's ironic we're in Walnut Way, because I believe that agriculture, I believe that there's a healing in that. I believe that using it as an industry pipeline in our community and forestry is huge. I believe that we have to start with the basics. And unless we hear people and create some real action for change, we're going to see that again.
Which is my next question. And by the way, not everybody has to answer. Otherwise, we'll be here an hour, and I want to respect your time. So here's my next question. Do your constituents trust the political systems, federal government, state government, city, to help them and their loved ones? Four of you just survived bitter primaries, so you've been out doing doors, knocking doors, including you, Representative Young. Do they trust the political systems and structures in place to improve their lives? Doesn't matter who goes forward first or y'all.
I think we could say that in one resounding no.
No. It's
definitely not. A certain segment, though. I think there's a few people that they're doing okay here in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin, but there's a certain segment that, like you said, has been ignored, and that's the segment that we need to focus attention on. As you go knock on doors, you go to different events, Juneteenth Day, Garfield Days here in Milwaukee, and you talk and engage the younger adults, is they feel left out. They feel that, no, I can't get a job. Every time I talk to someone, they say, Representative Young, I need a job. I can't get a job. I don't have a valid driver's license. These are basic issues where they can't get a job. And I think from where we stand from as leaders, we should be able to put them in a scenario where they can get a job, to give them their driver's license. If they need pardons, they need to wipe some stuff off their criminal record, then we should be able to do that. So we want them to be productive members of society, but they feel left out.
So. As a matter of fact, I even want to say just left out, but boxed out. You know, and whether you look back at legislation in 1950, when we began to box Milwaukee in so that they couldn't annex because individuals didn't want, you know, Milwaukee to grow in that fashion, to not allowing high-speed rail or other things to move people to the communities where there are jobs. So people have been boxed out. And I don't think it's just the young population. I do believe that it's older individuals who, you know, frankly, have not had an opportunity. And let's not forget the people who have been scarred by the fact that we lead in the nation in the incarceration of African-American men and Native American men. And as a result of that, that I've been in the correction system, that C or that F is on their forehead, and they never get an opportunity. There have been studies that show you can go and apply as a white man and have a felony, and another person who's a black man with no prior record can go and apply, and you'll get an interview and potentially get the job quicker. We've got to find pathways to opportunity for people regardless of their income, what their zip code is they come from, what their race is, or if they have a prior record. If you want to be working, if you want to be a productive member of society, we need to be able to have pathways that can make that happen. And that's why even in the Love and Faith model, I talk about using hubs, because people don't know what to do. And even if they know that something exists, they don't quite know how to navigate. So we're going to have connectors that can help people to do that.
I appreciate exactly what Representative Young and Senator Taylor said. I mean, I think that there is a sort of disconnect, or there's a lack of appreciation for it. And I think that's because more people, and I'm speaking personally about my own election, I think people value you as a leader. There's a disconnect between politics and then you as the leader itself. I think what we've seen and witnessed is that there are people who are looking to us for solutions. We're not supposed to duplicate what's going on the federal level where everything is gridlocked. When I go do doors, or when I talk to people, people want solutions. They don't want me saying something that's obvious, like we need jobs. You know, actually, that's a false statement, because there are 82,000 some jobs available in Milwaukee. What we need is people who have the intellectual capacity to do the jobs, and we need to create that pipeline to get the jobs as in the state level and the city level, as Senator Taylor said. So I think there's a disconnect between the party and people, because people are different from the party. You either get someone with solutions or you don't. And I think what we see now is people want some people with solutions.
I don't want to cut off any debate. Was there an answer?
I was going to say, too, what I saw and heard on the door is that people understand that when you come to the door that you're only one person. And so they use you as an avenue to vent and to tell you what their issues are, but they really don't think that you can do anything about it, because they realize that you have to go back to a collective body with those ideas. The other thing that I've seen is that I've seen certain segments of people exit the city. I had a constituent, lived 43 years in my community. He actually helped me collect nomination papers, and he's gone, moved to Mequon. Another individual bought a $650,000 house in Mequon. These are individuals who live in Milwaukee that we can't afford to lose, but we're seeing them exit every day. And it's almost to the point where you begin to feel like individuals who have the means, who have the ability to go, are deciding to leave. And it's really, really frustrating, because there's no reason why Milwaukee, with all the individuals that we have here, all the talent, all the abilities that we have here, that people should have to feel like Milwaukee isn't a place of opportunity. And that's exceptionally frustrating to me.
What organizations could fill the void if there is a lack of belief in government? Are we talking schools, both higher education and K-12? Are we talking churches? Are we talking businesses? Are we talking NGOs, non-governmental, non-profits? So if there is a lack of respect for the political institutions which you are all a part of, what other institutions can come in to make a difference in the future?
I think it's all hands on deck. I think, you know, we need all of those entities to make every other entity work. And I think that that's been a problem where, you know, people leave it up to government, or you leave it up to faith-based organizations, or the community just says, you know, I'm done with it. But we need everybody at the table willing to do their part to make sure that this works. And we don't necessarily have that.
When I think about, you know, steps moving forward, and we all will have a chance to go back to Madison and talk to our colleagues, and try to find, you know, the process to move forward on real solutions that can impact these families and individuals that are affected by these issues. There is going to be a huge disconnect in understanding that Black people that live in the city of Milwaukee want to be able to engage the law enforcement officers and live through those encounters, right? And we end up having the chance to debate individuals that need to be champions of better creating the institution of great policing services to communities that, you know, statistically have been given the short end of the stick when it comes to services from their own police department. Or even understanding that the same individuals, the same young people and young adults and generations of folks, when you look at the history of the Milwaukee Police Department, that there have been discriminatory policies that have not made it any easier for those Black applicants to get on the actual police force, right? And we've seen that through history. So what it's really going to take is even those that continually disagree with us to actually be able to understand that we're trying to make things better, even for the institution of policing and law enforcement in this state.
And the follow-up question for Representative Young is a former police officer. Representative Young, you're aware of all the calls now for the hiring of more police officers. A presidential candidate who we said we wouldn't name said that, but even today, the Milwaukee Common Council, their public safety plan, it suggests the hiring of 280 more police officers over 2 years. Is that the answer, sir?
I think that's part of it. And actually, I just came out with a press release on some of the things that I would like to do. And one of the things, when we hire these new officers, we got to start hiring more officers of color. It doesn't make any sense that we have a city of minority people, majority, but yet if you take a look at the police department, look at the fire department, it doesn't reflect that. I just found out, and I thought that you couldn't do it, but and this new legislation, and I just talked to Senator Taylor about this earlier, is that when we hire officers, just like the Bucks Arena, we're asking a private entity to hire 50% of their employees from low-income zip codes. We can still do that with the city, state, and county. So I'm basically proposing legislation that would ask that we hire any officers or firefighters, that we hire 40% of the people from low-income zip codes. You can fine-tune the legislation, but basically I'm trying to get it. I want to improve the relationship with the law enforcement and the community. And one way of doing that is hiring more people from your community.
Are there six co-sponsors of Representative Young's bill?
They haven't seen it.
We still have talk to talk about that. And I think I want to correct a few things. The first I want to say is that is not the Common Council's plan. That was the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you.
It has not been something that has been agreed to by the Common Council. And I know that I was with Alderwoman Cox this morning, and others previously spoke to them this evening, including the President of the Common Council.
It's not the position of the
council. So it is
council.
Not the Thank position of the council, correction. And I think that that's important to say that. Also, I want to say for, you know, the not named presidential candidate and anybody else who is suggesting that hiring more police is the answer, I want to say it's not. Access to opportunity is what we are going to have to do. And it is correct, as Representative Young has stated, that policing and community police relationships is what started this. This is really not about Sherman Park. It could have happened anywhere. The issue was community police relationship and a lack of transparency in that and justice in that that created what I would like to say the pressure cooker that ultimately created the uprising. What I believe is really important is we need all hands on deck, like Representative Johnson has stated, Senator-elect has stated, is that we need all hands on deck. So when you ask who can do the work, I think that what we need is a delivery model that creates infrastructure for all hands on deck. The faith community, nonprofits, schools, candidly, I think we need hubs all over the community so that people aren't trying to figure out in mazes where to go. Even sitting here today, we can't have six different answers. We gotta have one plan, one delivery model that everybody links to so that we can create a wheel that is a powerful wheel that can get something done. And candidly, that's been presented. We have to hear. And if we would have done some of the things that had been articulated and shared previously to create opportunity with the God-given stuff we have, like we were paying to get rid of our waste wood. Why? When we can create opportunity for people with that. When we were paying to get rid of our leaves, why? When we can grow soil so that we can create opportunity with that. And when we put that soil in a bag, it's manufacturing. It's not the manufacturing of all, but it's the manufacturing we're always gonna need because we always need something that humans need, food, which is why I said it's ironic that we're at Walnuts Way.
One local pastor in the journal Sentinel suggested that the unique nature of the family in the inner city, single-parent households, high teen pregnancy rate, grandparents raising children, played a role in the unrest in Sherman Park. Could I get your opinion on that? I also want to note one local leader summarized it this way, a dysfunctional lifestyle choices like father absent homes. The role of the family in the inner city?
But I guess the problem becomes how do those things correlate with individuals who live in these neighborhoods who encounter the police and they're deemed these high crime neighborhoods, right? So you have over policing where police are constantly told to continue to focus their efforts only in those neighborhoods, and the disproportionate killing of black men when they encounter police. The problem is that does not equate to why when you clearly see that white individuals and white residents are able to engage police and be able to live through those encounters.
Okay. Any other representative?
It moves the goalpost. It's a scapegoat. So if it's single parents or if it's fatherless households, then that's allowing a lot of folks to not own the reality that we're in. I guess I don't care, because that is an absolute non-solution based comment. Because if that's so what, and we know kids are resilient whether they've got one parent, zero parents, if you give them quality opportunity, they're going to take it, because young people they thrive in that environment. So I think broader, it's really about wealth and money. I mean, and I'm not talking about necessarily state resources of which department spends what. I'm talking about wealth, the amount of money that's in somebody's pocket or their checking account, the equity that they have in the home, so that when an emergency happens, they can pay their hospital bill, or their car breaks down, they can actually leverage to. So if you're living paycheck to paycheck, or one cash check to one cash check, we're not building wealth. We're not leaving inheritance to the next child so that they start with one leg up. And so, I guess to the comment, I don't care, because it's absolutely not solution-oriented. It's moving the goalposts and trying to blame people. And I'm totally disinterested in wasting time blaming people rather than, as we've been talking about, just providing solutions and going forward.
And, we talk about family and lack of family. Let's look back. Let's go back years when we got rid of AFDC and we implemented W-2. And what did that do? That took the parent
out of
the house. Mm-hmm. So if it was a single family home, then who's at home when the kids are
because
at
of
home?
The work mandate that's
correct.
W-2.
So the parents is at work, the kids are at home raising themselves, and a village of kids raising themselves. And what happens? And this is, honestly, I think we need to look at the W-2, the impact of it, and I've had this conversation with other people and do some type of changes, but the status quo is not working, and that's not helping the family out. Mm-hmm. Also, you talk about what's going on right now. I wanted to just say this, that I'm concerned with the law enforcement in relationship. Right now, there's just recently two things that came out. The videos are concerned, not releasing the video to the family and to the community. We talk about transparency, building that relationship. I don't think that's a good idea for the Attorney General to not release the video.
Or for that matter, the other video in the Jay Anderson matter. But if I could say something before we go too far off of fathers.
Okay.
Because as a strong black woman, I want to say I believe fathers matter. Mm-hmm. I believe that men matter. And so although I do agree that we can't use it as a scapegoat, and I don't want to hear the argument, oh, the Democrats are the reason that, you know, we have these programs and blah, 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 I want to say this. When AFDC existed, we said the father couldn't be in the house. We created it. Badger is our animal, not the ostrich. So why do we keep putting our head in the sand as if we don't know that we helped create this? She said, teen pregnancy, let's call it for the trauma it is. We led in statutory rape, and we did not heal the trauma that exists in our community. And when parents were not in the household, and you got babies that raise babies that raise babies, you got the I don't know raising the I don't know raising the I don't know. So we got here not just because of one party, not just because of one group of electeds. We got here because we put our head in the sand for generations that got us where we are. So do I believe that fathers play a role? Sure. As the strong black woman I am, I believe in a man being a provider if he can be for his family. And I believe it creates something. And Mr. Smith, whose son actually was the one that was killed, and the police lack of transparency in the police community relationship is part of the reason that we're sitting in this situation, he says something that was powerful. And I'd love for you to interview him. Mr. Smith said, you know what? I played a role because I was a role model for my kid, and I gave him some of the wrong things to connect to. And as a result of that, I'm glad that now he saw me live my life different. But if I could do different, I would try to do different. His son got up and said, I got four boys and I want to be able to do different. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about how do we take individuals who are saying, I want to do different, and help to connect them to opportunity and pathways. And I think that fathers play a role. Do I think that you can't be awesome growing up in a single parent home? I mean, look at me. I grew up, my parents divorced, my dad's still around, but I was raised by a single mother who got divorced. My grandmother was widowed, so she had children that grew up in a single parent home. My son is awesome.
Isaiah's how old now?
He is 16.
I understand.
And even though he's an awesome kid, he was walking down the street to give a turkey to a neighbor and could do nothing to not be seen as a criminal by his own police department. So those are the issues that have to be dealt with.
I checked with the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. At one point, I think Representative Goyke mentioned the money, but it's gotta be about more than money. But here's what the Fiscal Bureau said today. Revenue sharing aid to Milwaukee, $271 million a year. Total aid to MPS, general and categoricals, $643.8 million. That's $925 million, almost 1 cent of our 5 cent sales tax comes to Milwaukee, but it's more than the money. The answer is not more money for some of these issues, correct? Who would want to speak to that?
Well, I didn't mean to insinuate that government investment doesn't matter. Those, you know, having quality institutions matters. What I'm talking about, what my comment meant was personal wealth. And so I think it absolutely matters the degree that the state invests in businesses and companies that locate in the central city and that commit to hiring folks that can walk to work in the 30th Street Industrial Corridor. I think that absolutely matters, and it should be not just doubled but multiplied 10 times over. And I'm not saying that's not throwing money at a problem. That's called an investment, and I guarantee that there will be a massive return on that investment. That the community around Sherman Park, and not just Sherman Park neighborhood, will flock to those opportunities. We invest in an industry in the 30th Street Industrial Corridor. They open the doors, need 100 people to do manufacturing or whatever it is. I guarantee you that people will line up around the corner for those jobs, and that we'll get double, triple, three times, four times our return on investment.
And then we have to talk about that even though the city of Milwaukee is getting money from the state, which in my opinion may not necessarily be enough, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, and that's that 49% of the city's budget goes to police. And, you know, the hiring of additional police, you're looking at a $45,000 starting income that doesn't include their benefits. So we can't continue to hire more police. Now, a few may be needed, but at the scale that people are talking about, that takes money away from other things. Because even if money is earmarked in the budget to hire these additional police, what happens for the duration of the 25 plus years that these individuals remain on the force? Their pensions, their benefits, the whole nine yards. So that money takes away from other things. And other services that could be provided in the city that would actually benefit the individuals who are living in these zip codes that are hardest hit. So we have to talk about that elephant. And
we can't police our way out of it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. We have to find a way to do other things or do things differently.
I think it is, because when it comes to money, about when we talk or discuss politics, and I've always said this even in the legislature, it's never just about the money. Although behind the scenes, a lot of people will, that's really what it's about. And the problem for me is, and I think Evan pointed out to it, what's the return on the investment? Mm-hmm. I've been asking for years, what's the dollar amount? As a stockbroker, as a certified financial education, as a mutual fund manager, what's the number? Give me a number that will be adequate for you to say, it costs this much to educate a child. Give me a number. I've asked that since 2004, it's 2016, I still don't have an answer. Because if you give Jason Fields a number, if I have individuals in education say, Jason, it's gonna take $15,000 to educate a student, I will fight tooth and nail for that $15,000. But what I will not do is every time we get into a financial discussion, the only answer is we need more money. But you don't tell me what that money's going to get used for. And I hear stories of teachers coming out of their pocket. How is it teachers are coming out of their pocket when you guys are getting a dollar out of every, what, $5 or a dollar out of every, there's something wrong. We're not using the money in the right way. Now, talk to me about how we're using the money. And better yet, show me. And this is just a businessman in me. Just don't tell me about the money. Show me where it's going. And the reality is that, and the senator said, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. There's some self-responsibility that goes on in the city of Milwaukee. It's some people that's not managing the money right. That's just a fact. It's a lot of people here not managing the money right, and the argument is we need more money.
I'm going to give you an example of something that Jason said that we could take right to the incident that happened. So there are individuals who have community organizers who are organizing in communities. But if those organizers aren't connectors, are connected to the young people or to the people in the community, then how effective can they be at whatever organizing they're doing? Even if they are federally, at the federal level, seen as the vehicle, or at the state level, or at the whatever other level. So it's a hard thing to do, but we gotta look at our outcomes.
Right.
And we gotta be honest and have some real tough love conversations about outcomes. But I'll say this, we can't police our way out of it. We've gotta invest, and when you say those numbers, you make it seem like Milwaukee gets a whole bunch of money.
That's the old argument, pennies for Polk County, dollar for...
But that's the problem. We go with that, you know, those conversations, but can we have the real conversation about, even though Milwaukee gets the amount of money that you identified in education, if the equalization formula that is presently set up is such that we've been getting money skimmed from us the entire time, we might be getting a lot, but maybe we would do more to go with what Representative Johnson, Senator-elect just said. So I'm saying it's one thing to say, woo, they got $1 million, but if the formula really said we should have got $3 million or $2 million, then saying we got $1 million, well, it sounds like a lot.
You, Senator, you just used the term tough conversations. Is one of these tough conversations going up to someone, an African-American young man who is not employed, saying you should train for XYZ job or XYZ career? Are you doing that? In other words, when you knock on a door and someone says, I can't, Representative, Senator, I can't get a job, what's your answer? Are you challenging them and saying, Senator?
Most definitely.
What job should they be training for?
So two things. Most definitely that's a conversation you have to have. But sometimes I'm the person to say it, but again, I'm gonna say we need connectors. We need the person that, see, I can say it to my 16-year-old what he needs to do, but somebody else that's closer to his age can say it, and all of a sudden it sounds like a great idea. You know, we have to have individuals that can connect to the people. I'm gonna give you an example. We were standing in the park, and a young man threw a rock at an officer. Not threw it like this, but like, you know, tossed something. And then the officer started running after the young man. several people said, stop, 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 and they didn't stop. But one person connected with him and said, stop, and he stopped. And as a result of that, the officers took him, blah, 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 the whole thing. They talked as a community about it. But that happened because somebody could reach him. We have to have organizers that look like the people that they're serving, live near the people that they're serving, have credibility with the people that they're serving, so that you can help them go on the pathway. You can't tell a person, you need to go get training in concrete. You need to show them how to go to Job Corps, how to sign up on Wednesday, how to get signed up so that they can be on the path to get the training for concrete. You can't just send them and think it's gonna work. You gotta have a connector to connect them through the process.
And then, you know, I've had individuals talk to me about finding jobs, and you provide the resources. But sometimes the follow-up comes back is that they're not accepting any more individuals into this program, or the resources that are available don't have the capacity for the number of individuals who need to utilize the service. So that's the issue. We have resources available sometimes, but even those resources are underfunded. So, you know, until we can sit down and have legitimate conversations about what's available, the capacity, if there's a waiting list, what other types of alternatives that we have. You know, my grandfather came to Milwaukee umpteen years ago, and he only had an eighth grade education, but he was still able to earn a living for his family. In today's time, as a child care provider, I know for a fact that I have had parents who are capable of doing significant jobs. And they still fall into the category of working part-time for this job and then going to another job and working part-time. Because the way we've structured so many of our jobs in Milwaukee is that if an individual is hired part-time, they don't have to offer benefits. And so the companies utilize that escape hole. And for the people who are relying on these jobs to take care of their families, there's no reason why. One of my daycare parents was a master mechanic, and he worked for a very well-known auto shop here, but he got paid based on per jobs. He still qualified for food stamps, he still qualified for Medicaid, and this individual worked 12 hours a day. The same with another daycare parent that was a manager. She has a college degree, and she managed, you know, a tax service. Open the doors at 9 o'clock in the morning. One of her kids left their backpack. I called the office. No, I called her cell phone at 10:30, expecting the kids to be at home. They were still at the office because the mom had to clean up, but you still qualify for food stamps. You still qualify for Medicaid. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about these elephants in the room that are preventing the individuals who want to get ahead from being able to get there. Let's talk about the lack of home ownership for these low-income families. Even though the amount of money they're paying for rent is significantly more than they would probably pay for a mortgage, but because they don't make the three times more than what the mortgage would cost, they never qualify to buy a home. These are all serious issues that our low-income families are not being able to access. And so you're gonna get these generations of people feeling hopeless because we're the opportunities for them.
They've never seen them.
And even if they go to college, let's talk about the student loan issue. Mm-hmm. Or if they don't have, if they are first generation college students, or if their mothers are struggling financially for whatever reason, there's no help there when it comes time to pay their balance or the parents' portion or the books.
And $500 in policy ain't gonna be the thing to be able to help a family that's in that situation. I wanna build off of what you said about home ownership. You know, one of the things that the mayor said is he wanted us to create a jobs program to demolish houses. And no, what we need to do is take some of those foreclosed properties that are in the city, and if you're gonna do anything, do deconstruction so that you can use some of the product that's inside of our beautiful homes that are here. But instead, why not get nonprofits and other organizations and allow them to use some of those foreclosed properties in some of the mapped areas that are hot spots so that we can put activity. If there's a problem in an area, you know what's gonna help? What's gonna help? Putting activity of individuals that are working and connecting with people to be able to make a difference. Like We Got This and Andre Lee Ellis or Walnut Way, you know, since we're sitting here. So I would say that we've gotta create the opportunity for those houses to be turned into home ownership for people in the community.
Such as the North Northcott program. We just recently saw that they had a class of at least 10 that graduated, and they have been working on houses, a total gut-out job where they're rehabbing them, and they're learning lifelong skills, so ultimately they can go and probably start their own business or go work with other companies.
And here's Northcott is a place that struggles to go to what Senator-elect said, you know, programs that exist that are not adequately funded. Northcott struggles to exist, but doing great programs to train people who are reentering, train people who are from the zip codes we speak about, and then also doing the work on properties to create home ownership. We've got to make it where we're not just dealing with things in silos, but we're actually able to address things across the board.
Okay, I want to respect your time. So maybe just a couple more questions. The next one is, you heard the criticism from the Republican candidate who we can't name, remember, because this is a DT and HC free zone. And he said, Democrats run major cities. Democrats, his word, take votes for granted. You're six Democrats.
You're being nice. He named a population, but go ahead.
Yes, ma'am, I'm trying. So I need a response to that. Just a couple of responses, because then a couple more questions and we're done, because I want to respect your time.
Well, he didn't say that in Milwaukee.
Say it, Representative. That's my representative.
He went out to the counties that obviously, if you look at this administration, that they invest their workforce development dollars and their business expansion dollars into Washington, Ozaukee, and Waukesha County. You know, to say that, you know, that just these blanket Democratic policies and the way that we do things aren't creating the outcomes. What happens is that it's true collaboration to believe that that investment is necessary into those communities. And that's what that is blocking us here in the state of Wisconsin to get us to actually invest in neighborhoods like Sherman Park or in my district that have a number of issues that we can't believe truly that it's worth investing in those communities just as much as other communities as well.
And real investment, because it's such a shame what happened with Wedick and the 483 ghost jobs that never did happen.
That was supposed to be actually in Representative Goyke's area.
That was a press conference that several of you had yesterday.
But then we have workforce development goals that we have to hit because we know that retirees are happening in the near future. So right when you have a depletion of the workforce in a tub, and the tub is draining more than the water that's refilling it, you know, we clearly are running into a situation where we're not going to be able to retain those jobs. And we're saying that that workforce development dollars aren't even necessary to make sure that we invest into these communities.
You got a PS on that?
Well, I just wanted to, the ignorance of that policy is exhausting. To think that there is this hard line in our economy that ends at the city of Milwaukee's boundaries, and then a new economy picks up in a suburb is so ignorant and exhausting. We are a region. We are competing nationally and globally. And so let me say this. I came here on accident. I didn't know the neighborhood. I never heard of the neighborhood growing up that I live in now. And I am so thankful and lucky that I came to Milwaukee, that I live where I live, that I get to serve with the people on this table, that I have more diversity in my life than I ever had, than I ever thought I would have. That candidate is dead wrong. The people in the audience that clap for that comment are dead wrong. A rising tide lifts all boats. And to think that our region doesn't need a successful core of this city or a successful African-American, Hispanic, Hmong, whatever population, they are dead wrong. And our business leaders know that. The front page of the Journal Sentinel yesterday was a titan of industry in the Milwaukee area calling on manufacturing, investment, and jobs in this community because he knows when he looks globally and nationally, we need the entire region to be successful. Mm-hmm. The reason why I wanted to share that personal comment is to specifically, hopefully, reach out to folks that look like me, that think that the community we're sitting in is different than the community that they live in. Mm-hmm. In some ways, there's different things that happen, but we are all so connected and so similar, and we just need to abandon that ignorance and that idea as fast as possible.
Can I say something about it? I'm sorry, Representative Bourne.
And the insult to injury to those comments are, you know, about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I sat at Joseph's Project, who picks people up from Milwaukee and they transport these individuals to jobs in Sheboygan. So you have these industries that create jobs outside of Milwaukee, but yet they need Milwaukee bodies to help make these jobs work. And that's so insulting, because if people will pack up and get on a van to take a van ride each way to go to work, they will definitely do the same thing if those opportunities are created right here in their communities, but they're not. And there was one lady that was a part of this class, and the comment was, oh, we have to get you more colleagues. Why are you the only woman? Because women have children. And if I have a child that's in school and I'm taking a van ride to Sheboygan, my child gets sick, I can't pick them up. And then if I'm taking that van ride to school, when childcare subsidies only pay up to 10 hours a day, who's gonna get my child to daycare and who's gonna get them from? So we create these silos and call them opportunities that the majority of people can't even qualify to participate in. So those are issues.
Okay, I want to pick up on something that Evan said, and he said the people around this table. I want to say that when all of this happened, when the uprising happened, when the dragon woke up, that I had colleagues across the aisle who also called and said, we got to do something. And so I believe, or at least I want to believe, that we realize that this isn't just Sherman Park, this isn't just Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin. We're all in this together. If you look at your hand, it kind of looks like the state of Wisconsin. It's all connected. And so when you get done, we as Wisconsin have to figure out how to do this. And when we learn to take our diversity as our strength and to not allow ourselves to be pigeonholed into being segregated in our thought because we have the most segregated city in the nation, then that's when I believe we're gonna do so much more.
Two final questions really quickly. The first one is just for you two. You both have children. What advice do you give your children when they interact with police officers?
So Isaiah had the privilege of sitting with me through so many Know Your Rights events where we, you know, have this video we go through so you know how to interact with police. And I would argue that he used what he learned in the video. You know, the police said, hey, stop. And he stopped. Now, he thought some stuff in his head, but he stopped. The police officer came up and immediately patted him down and put his hands up and let the officer pat him down. They asked him questions, he answered them. Now, what the problem is he never moved from criminal to just law-abiding good kid. They never said, you're giving out a turkey. You know, we're giving out food today. Let's see if we can get some food to go with that turkey. So I encourage him to, you know, be cooperative, to fight the fight somewhere else if you feel like there's injustice that happens.
Representative?
That's the same thing that I teach my daughter, but I also teach the kids in the neighborhood that you obey the rules. If you feel that you've been wrongly accused or wrongly stopped, then you can deal with that later. But for your personal safety, you obey the rules. I think one of the other things that we need to get to that is a huge obstacle, especially for children of color, is that juvenile interrogation, a police officer, it doesn't matter how old your child is, they have the legal right to question those children without a parent's permission and without a parent's presence. That's an issue, and that's something that needs to be addressed, because we're feeding our children to a juvenile system that's not designed to have their best interest at heart. So as a parent, there needs to be some type of precautions there that will allow me as a parent to at least be able to say yay and nay as far as the rights of my child. If my child needs a permission slip to go on a field trip, they should need some type of parental involvement to interrogate my child, especially when children are young and vulnerable and don't understand that if I'm not being detained, I have the right to leave. They see a person of authority and they want to cooperate because that's what they're being told. They don't necessarily know what that cooperation means, especially if they get it wrong.
But come on, the trauma from the experience is what I'm very concerned about. I'm still disappointed that there's never been an apology. And there's never been anything that says how they interacted with my child in that car was, frankly, scary for my child. And that's my kid. So when you get done, when I can talk to men who are 60, 70, and 80 who tell me about their experience around the same time, that is a pattern and practice that has existed in our community. And to go back to where we started, the community police relationships. So we have to address that. That's in training, that's in cultural competency training, but that's also in accountability, to go to what Representative Fields Alex said, which is we have to look at the outcomes and say, what can we do different?
Well, especially for, I've seen a 10-year-old cognitively disabled child put in the back of a paddy wagon. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's anybody on the face of this earth would think that that was okay. But that was a decision that a police officer made and was upheld by a supervisor. So if these individuals are in the field and they don't see anything wrong with that, then that's an issue in itself.
Okay, this is a final question, I promise. Could I get answers from each of you? If there are no major changes in the systemic issues that we've just been talking about, what does the, I'm going to use the senator's term, the next uprising in this city look like? Senator?
What you saw and worse.
What you saw and worse. Thank you, ma'am.
We're breeding that.
Same. Worse. Worse. A lot worse.
Mr. Goyke?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I think both of my colleagues are absolutely right that the emotion is there, the anger is there, that's real. But oh my God, I hope it does not happen. And I hope that this conversation and our efforts and our colleagues' efforts to help out prevent it from ever happening.
Thank you. Representative Young?
I would say you would see a continuation, and the status quo cannot continue on what Senator Taylor talked about, Representative Fields, that we have to create this pathway to get people jobs. If you give people jobs, crime will stop or be reduced. If we don't, you will see a continuation.
Thank you, sir. Representative Moore?
Black communities deserve to have access to lives of dignity and respect. And when we neglect those voices, when we neglect their lives as if it doesn't matter, we are breeding and allowing these things to fester.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
I agree with everybody at this table. That's the one concern that I really have, that, you know, what's going to come out of these riots? What type of legislation are we going to see? What type of intervention are we going to see from individuals who have never walked the streets of Milwaukee and who don't have an understanding of the way things are here? You have representatives like around this table who are trying to stand in the middle of that gap. But sometimes, because we're not necessarily, we're not the ruling majority, that becomes an issue. But because we live in these communities, our fear is real. And depending on what we see that comes out of this situation, I guess we'll know if things get better or if they get worse.
Steve,
yes, ma'am.
Martin Luther King said, the language of the unheard is what is riots and what we saw. If we don't change anything, the language will be the same.
Yeah, and just one little closing statement that and what I'm seeing just more recently, especially coming from the AG's office, and I talked about the cameras, but then there's a concern what you got former Milwaukee police officers that's investigating the crime. It's not transparent. We're talking about building relationships.
Right, that's not accountability.
Yeah, that's just like going to your big brother and say, hey, investigate this. I don't know if the community would accept that, and I think that's, you know, something that the AG's office need to rethink.
They need
rethink.
More than three people to go with the bill. We need some staffing for the officer-involved death bureau that has been created.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
There's about 52 years of legislative experience around this table, which is why Wisconsin and I really thought this is a dialogue that should occur, and I want to thank you all for helping us shed light on some of these issues. Hopefully, moving forward, I want Senator Taylor, Representative Field, Representative Goyke, Representative Young, Representative Bowen, Senator-elect Johnson, thank you all so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely.